I hit submit. There's no going back. Yeah, I can edit, but that's not how promises work. And living for everyone is a promise to the world. I know it's early in the day, but my chest squeezes because it's also getting late, for a Decker at least. I can't do this alone, the leaving part. I'm really not dragging Lydia into my end day. Once I get out of here, not if, I'll go see Lydia and Penny, but I'm not telling Lydia. I don't want her to consider me dead before I am, or ever bring her any sadness. Maybe I'll send her a postcard explaining everything while I'm out living. What I need is a coach who can double as a friend for me, or a friend who can serve as a coach for me. And that's what this popular app often promoted on Countdowners provides. The Last Friend app is designed for lonely Deckers, and for any good soul who wants to keep a Decker company in their final hours. This isn't to be confused with Necro, which is intended for anyone who wants a one-night stand with a Decker, the ultimate no-strings-attached app. I've always been so disturbed by Necro, and not just because sex makes me nervous. But no, the Last Friend app was created so people can feel worthy and loved before they die. There are no user charges, unlike Necro, which goes for $7.99 a day, which disturbs me because I can't help but feel as if a human is worth more than $8. Anyway, just like any potential new friendship, the relationships born from the Last Friend app can be pretty hit or miss. I was once following this Countdowners feed where this Decker met a last friend, and she was slow about updating, sometimes for hours, to the point where viewers in the chat room assumed she'd died. She was actually very much alive, just living her last day right. And after she died, her last friend wrote a brief eulogy that taught me more about the girl than I'd learned in any of her updates. But it's not always sweet like that. A few months ago, this Decker with a sad life unwittingly befriended the infamous last friend serial killer. And that was so tragic to read about. And one of the many reasons I struggle with trusting this world. I think engaging with a last friend could do me some good. Then again, I don't know if it's sadder to die alone or in the company of someone who not only doesn't mean anything to you, but also probably doesn't care much for you either. Time is wasting. I have to take a shot and find the same bravery hundreds of thousands of Deckers before me have found. I check my bank account online, and what remains from my college funds has been automatically deposited into my account, which is only about $2,000, but it's more than enough money to get through the day. I can visit the World Travel Arena downtown, where Deckers and guests can experience the cultures and environments of different countries and cities. I download the Last Friend app on my phone. It's the fastest download ever. Like it's some sentient being who understands the whole point of its existence is that time is running out for someone. The app has a blue interface with an animation of a gray clock as two silhouettes approach each other and high-five. Last Friend zooms into the center and a menu drops down. Dying today? Not dying today. I click Dying Today. A message pops up. We here at Last Friend, Inc. are collectively sorry for this loss of you. Our deepest sympathies extend to those who love you and those who will never meet you. We hope you find a new friend of value to spend your final hours with today. Please fill out the profile for best results. Deeply sorry to lose you. Last Friend, Inc. A blank profile pops up, and I fill it out. Name, Mateo Torres. Age, 18. Gender, male. Height, 5'10". Weight, 164 pounds. Ethnicity, Puerto Rican. Orientation, skip. Job, skip. Interests, music, wandering. Favorite movies, TV shows, books. Timberwolves by Gabriel Reeds. Plaid is the New Black. the Scorpius Hawthorne series. Who you were in life. I'm an only child, and I've only ever really had my dad. But my dad has been in a coma for 2 weeks, and will probably wake up after I'm gone. I want to make him proud and break out. I can't go on being the kid who keeps his head low, because all that did was rob me of being out there with you all. Maybe I could have met some of you sooner. Bucket list. I want to go to the hospital and say goodbye to my dad. And then my best friend, but I don't want to tell her I'm dying. After that, I don't know. I want to make a difference for others and find a different Mateo while I'm at it. Final thoughts? I'm going for it. I submit my answers. The app prompts me to upload a photo. I scroll through my phone's album and there are a lot of photos of Penny and screenshots of songs I'd recommend to Lydia. There are others of me out in the living room with Dad. There's my junior year photo, which is lame. I stumble on one I took of myself wearing the Luigi hat I won in June for entering this Mario Kart contest online. I was supposed to send the contest host my picture to be featured on the website, but I didn't think the boy goofing around in the Luigi hat was very me, so I never submitted it. But I was wrong. Go figure. This is exactly the person I always wanted to be. Loose, fun, carefree. No one will look at this photo and think it was out of character, because none of these people know me. And their only expectations of me are to be the person I'm presenting myself as in my profile. I upload the photo, and a final message pops up. Be well, Mateo.
Rufus. 1:59 a.m. My foster parents are waiting downstairs. They tried rushing in here the second they found out, but Malcolm played bodyguard because he knew I still needed a minute. I change into my cycling gear, my gym tights with blue basketball shorts over them, so my package isn't poking out there like Spider-Man's, and my favorite gray fleece, because there's no other way I can imagine getting around this city on my end day, except on my bike. I grab my helmet because safety first. I take one last look at the room. I don't break down or nothing like that, seriously, even as I remember playing catch with my boys. I leave the light on as I step out and keep the door open, so Malcolm and Tego don't get weird about going back in. Malcolm gives me a little smile. His playing it cool game is weak, 'cause I know he's been losing his head. They all are. I would, too, if the cards were reversed. You actually got Francis awake? I ask.
Yeah.
It's possible I'm gonna die at the hands of my foster father. If you're not his alarm clock, you shouldn't wake him up. I follow Malcolm downstairs. Tego, Jen Laurie, and Francis are there, but they don't say anything. The first thing I want to ask is if anyone has heard from Amy. Like, if her aunt isn't holding her up. But that's not right. I really hope she didn't change her mind about wanting to see me. It's gonna be okay. I gotta focus on everyone who is here. Francis is wide awake and wearing his favorite slash-only bathrobe. Like he's some kingpin whose business makes him stacks on stacks of money. Instead of a technician spending the little he makes on us. Good guy. But he looks mad wild because his hair is patchy, since he cuts it himself to save a few bucks. Which is crazy stupid because Tego is a haircut artist. I kid you not, Tego gives the best fades in the city. And that bastard better open up his own barbershop one day and give up his screenwriting dreams. Francis is too white to rock a fade, though. Jen Laurie dries her eyes with the collar of her old college t-shirt before putting her glasses back on. She's at the edge of her seat, like when we watch Tego's favorite slasher flicks. And just like then, she gets up, but not because of some gross spontaneous combustion. She hugs me and cries into my shoulder, and it's the first time anyone's hugged me since I got the alert. And I don't want to let her go, but I have to keep it moving. Jen stays by my side as I stare at the floor. One less mouth to feed, right? No one laughs. I shrug. I don't know how to do this. No one gives you lessons on how to brace everyone for your death, especially when you're 17 and healthy. We've all been through enough seriousness, and I want them to laugh. Rock, paper, scissors, anyone? I clap my fist against my palm, playing scissors against no one. I do it again, this time playing rock, still against no one. Come on, guys. I go again and Malcolm plays paper against my scissors. It takes another minute, but we get several rounds going. Francis and Jen Laurie are easy to beat. I go up against Tego and rock beat scissors. Do over, Malcolm says. Tego switched from paper to rock last second.
Man, of all days to cheat Roof, why today?
Tego shakes his head. I give Tego a friendly bro push. Because you're a dick. The doorbell rings. I dart to the door, heart racing like whoa, and open it. Amy's face is so flushed I almost can't make out the huge birthmark on her cheek.
Are you kidding me?
Amy asks. I shake my head. I can show you the timestamp on my phone.
Not about your end day, Amy says. This.
She steps to the side and points at the bottom of the stairs. At Peck and his wrecked face. The one I said I never wanted to see again as long as I lived.
Mateo. 2:02 a.m. I don't know how many last friend accounts are active in the world, but there are currently 42 online in New York City alone. And staring down these users feels a lot like being in my high school auditorium on the first day of classes. There's all this pressure, and I don't know where to start until I receive a message. There's a bright blue envelope in my inbox, and it glows and pulses, waiting to be clicked open. There's no subject line, just some basic information. Wendy May Green, 19 years old, female, Manhattan, New York, 2 miles away. I click her profile. She isn't a decker, just a girl who's up late looking to console one. In her bio, she's a self-described bookworm obsessed with all things Scorpius Hawthorne, and this common link is probably why she's reaching out. She also likes walking around, too, especially in late May when the weather is perfect. I won't be around for late May, Wendy May. I wonder how long she's had this profile, and if anyone's told her that speaking about the future like that might offend some deckers. How it might be mistaken as showing off how much life she still has left to live. I move past it and click her photo. She seems nice. Light-skinned, brown eyes, brown hair, a nose piercing, and a big smile. I open the message. Wendy May G, 2:02 a.m. Hi, Mateo. You have great taste in books. Bet you're wishing you had a death cloaking spell, huh? I'm sure she means well, but between her bio and this message, she's hammering me with nails instead of giving me the pat on the back I was hoping for. I won't be rude, though. Mateo T, 2:03 a.m. Hey, Wendy May. Thanks. You have great taste in books, too. Wendy May G, 2:03 a.m. Scorpius Hawthorne for life. How are you doing? Mateo T, 2:03 a.m. Not great. I don't want to leave my room, but I know I have to get out of here. Wendy May G, 2:03 a.m. What was the call like? Were you scared? Mateo T, 2:04 a.m. I freaked out a little bit. A lot of bit, actually. Wendy May G, 2:04 a.m. LOL, you're funny. And really cute. Your mom and dad must be losing their heads too, right? Mateo T, 2:05 a.m. I don't mean to be rude, but I have to go now. Have a nice night, Wendy May. Wendy May G, 2:05 a.m. What did I say? Why do you dead guys always stop talking to me? Mateo T, 2:05 a.m. It's no big deal, really. It's hard for my parents to lose their heads when my mom is out of the picture and my dad is in a coma. Wendy May G, 2:05 a.m. How was I supposed to know that? Mateo T, 2:05 a.m. It's in my profile. Wendy May G, 2:05 a.m. Fine, whatever. Do you have an open house then? I'm supposed to lose my virginity to my BF, but I want to practice first, and maybe you can help me out. I click out while she's typing another message and block her for good measure. I get her insecurities, I guess, and I feel bad for her and her boyfriend if she manages to cheat on him, but I'm not some miracle worker. I receive some more messages, these with subject lines. Subject 420, Kevin and Kelly, 21 years old, male, Bronx, New York, 4 miles away. Decker? No. Subject, my condolences, Mateo. Great name. Philly Boozer, 24 years old, male, Manhattan, New York, 3 miles away. Decker? No. Subject, you selling a couch? Good condition? J. Mark, 26 years old, male, Manhattan, New York, 1 mile away. Decker, no. Subject, dying sucks, huh? L.R., 20 years old, female, Manhattan, New York, 3 miles away. Decker, yes. I ignore Kevin and Kelly's message. Not interested in pot. I delete J. Mark's message because I'm not selling the couch Dad will need again for his weekend naps. I'm going to answer Philly's message, because it came first. Philly B, 2:06 a.m. Hey, Mateo, how's it going? Mateo T, 2:08 a.m. Hey, Philly, is it too lame to say I'm hanging in there? Philly B, 2:08 a.m. Nah, I'm sure it's rough. Not looking forward to the day Deathcast calls me. Are you sick or something? Pretty young to be dying. Mateo T, 2:09 a.m. I'm healthy, yeah. I'm terrified of how it's going to happen, but I'm nervous I'll somehow disappoint myself if I don't get out there. I definitely don't want to stink up the apartment by dying in here. Philly B, 2:09 a.m. I can help with that, Mateo. Mateo T, 2:09 a.m. Help with what? Philly B, 2:09 a.m. Making sure you don't die. Mateo T, 2:09 a.m. That's not a thing anyone can promise. Philly B, 2:10 a.m. I can. You seem like a cool guy who doesn't deserve to die, so you should come over to my apartment. It'll have to be a secret, though. But I have the cure to death in my pants. I block Philly and open up L's message. Maybe the third time will be the charm.
Rufus, 12:21 a.m. Amy gets in my face and pushes me against the fridge. She doesn't play when it comes to violence, because her parents got real extra when they tagged Team Rob the convenience store, assaulting the owner and his 20-year-old son. Shoving me around isn't going to get her locked up like them, though.
Look at him, Rufus! What the fuck were you thinking?
I refuse to look at Peck, who's leaning against the kitchen counter. I already saw the damage I did when he walked in. One eye shut, a cut on his lip, spots of dried blood on his swollen forehead. Jen Laurie is right next to him, pressing ice against his forehead. I can't look at her either. She's so disappointed in me. End day or not. Tiggo and Malcolm flank me. Quiet, too, since she and Francis already gave them shit for hitting the streets with me way past bedtime to rough Peck up. Not feeling so brave now, right? Peck asks.
Shut up.
Amy whips around, slamming her phone against the counter, startling everyone.
Don't follow us.
She pushes open the kitchen door, and Francis is not so casually hanging out by the staircase, trying to stay in the know, but also keep back so he doesn't have to shame or punish a Decker. Amy drags me into the living room by my wrist.
So what? Deathcast calls, and so you're free to lay into whoever the fuck you want?
I guess Peck didn't tell her I was beating his ass before I got the alert.
What?
There's no point lying. I was coming for him. Amy takes a step back, like I'm some monster who might lash out at her next, which kills me. Look, Ames, I was freaking out. I already felt like I didn't have a future before Deathcast dropped that grenade in my lap. My grades have always been shit. I'm almost 18. I lost you, and I was wilding out because I didn't know what I was going to do. I felt like a straight-up nobody, and Peck pretty much said the same damn thing.
You're not a nobody,
Amy says, shaking a little as she comes toward me, no longer scared. She takes my hand, and we sit on the couch where she first told me she was leaving Pluto, because her aunt on her mom's side had enough dough to take her in. A minute later, she also broke up with me, because she wanted a clean slate. Some cheap-ass tip from her elementary school classmate, Peck.
We didn't make sense anymore. And there's no point lying, like you said, even on your last day.
She holds my hand while she cries, which I was doubting she'd even do because she was so pissed when she got here.
I read our love wrong. But that doesn't mean I don't love you. You were there for me when I needed to act out and be angry, and you made me happy when I was tired of hating everything. Nobody's can't make somebody feel all of that.
She hugs me, resting her chin on my shoulder the same way she would relax on my chest whenever she was about to watch one of her historical documentaries. I hold her because I don't have anything new to say. I want to kiss her, but I don't need some fakeness from her. She's mad close, though, and I pull back so I can see her face, because maybe one last kiss might be real for her, too. She's staring at me, and I lean in. Tego comes into the living room and covers his eyes.
Oh, sorry.
I back up. Nah, you good.
We should do the funeral,
Tego says.
But take your time.
It's your day.
Sorry, it's not your day. It's not like your birthday. It's the opposite.
He twitches.
I'm gonna get everyone in here.
He steps.
I don't want to hog you,
Amy says. She doesn't let me go. Not until everyone comes in. I needed that hug. I'm looking forward to hugging the Plutos for a final Pluto Solar System group hug after the funeral. I stay seated in the center of the couch. I'm battling my lungs for my next breath hardcore. Malcolm sits to my left, Amy to my right, and Tego at my feet. Peck keeps his distance, playing around on Amy's phone. I hate that he's on her phone. But I broke his, so I gotta stay shut. This is my first Decker funeral, since my family didn't care about throwing one for themselves because we all had each other and didn't need anyone else, not co-workers or old friends.
Maybe if I'd gone to others, I'd be ready for the way Jen Laurie speaks directly to me and not the other attendees. It makes me feel vulnerable and seen. And it gets me teary-eyed. Like when someone sings happy birthday to me. Seriously, every year it never fails. Failed.
You never cried, even though you had every reason to. Like you were trying to prove something. The others...
Jen Laurie doesn't turn to the Plutos, not even a little. She doesn't break eye contact, like we're in a staring contest. Respect.
They all cried. But your eyes were so sad, Rufus. You didn't look at any of us for a couple days. I was convinced if someone posed as me, you wouldn't have known any better. Your hollowness was heavy until you found friends and more.
I turn, and Amy won't take her eyes off me. Same sad look she gave me when she broke up with me.
I always felt good when you were all together, Francis says.
He's not talking about tonight, I know that. Dying sucks, I bet. But getting locked up in prison while life keeps going on without you has got to be worse. Francis keeps staring but doesn't say anything else.
We don't have all day.
He waves Malcolm over.
Your turn.
Malcolm steps to the center of the room, his hunched back to the kitchen. He clears his throat, and it's harsh, like he's got something stuck in his pipes, and some spit flies out of his mouth. He's always been a mess, the kind of dude who will unintentionally embarrass you because he has bad table manners and no filter. But he can also tutor you in algebra and keep a secret. And that's the stuff I would talk about if I were giving his eulogy.
You are our bro, Roof. This is bullshit. Total fucking bullshit.
His head hangs low as he picks at the cuticles on his left hand.
It should take me instead.
Don't say that. Seriously, shut up.
I'm serious, he says. I know no one's living forever, but you should live longer than others. You matter more than other people. That's life. I'm this big nothing who can't keep a job bagging groceries, and you're...
dying. I interrupt, standing. I'm heated, and I punch him mad hard in the arm, not saying sorry either. I'm dying, and we can't trade lives. You're not a big nothing, but you can step your damn game up anyway. Tego stands, massaging his neck, beating back a twitch. Roof, I'll miss you shutting us up like this. You stopped me from assassinating Malcolm whenever he eats off our plates and doesn't flush twice. I was ready to see your damn mug until we were old. Tego takes off his glasses, wiping his tears with the back of his hand, and closes it into a tight fist. He looks up, like he's waiting for some death pinata to drop from the ceiling. You're supposed to be a lifer. No one says anything. They just cry harder. The sound of everyone grieving me before I'm gone gives me crazy chills. I want to console them and stuff, but I can't snap out of my daze. I spent a lot of time feeling guilty for living after I lost my family. But now I can't beat this weird Decker guilt for dying, knowing I'm leaving this crew behind. Amy steps up to the center, and we all know this is about to get mad real. Brutal.
Is it lame to say I think I'm stuck in a nightmare? I always thought everyone was being so dramatic when they said that this feels like a nightmare. Like, really? That's all you feel when tragedy happens? I don't know how I wanted them to feel, but I can say now they hit the nail on the head. There's another cliche for you, whatever. I want to wake up. And if I can't wake up, I want to go to sleep forever, where there's a chance I dream everything beautiful about you. Like how you looked at me. For me. and not because you wanted to gawk at this fuckery on my face.
Amy touches her heart, choking on her next words.
It hurts so much, Rufus, to think you won't be around for me to call or hug and...
She stops looking at me. She's squinting at something behind me, and her hand drops.
Did someone call the police?
I jump out of my seat and see the flashes of red and blue in front of the duplex. I'm in full-on panic mode that feels insanely brief and mad long, like 8 forevers. There's only one person who isn't surprised or freaking out. I turn to Amy and her eyes follow mine back to Peck.
You didn't,
Amy says, charging toward him. She snatches her phone from him. He assaulted me, Peck shouts. I don't care if he's on his way out.
He's not expired meat. He's another human being,
Amy shouts back.
Holy shit.
I don't know how Peck did it because he hasn't made any calls here, but he got the cops on me at my own funeral. I hope Deathcast calls that bastard in the next few minutes.
Go out the back,
Tigo says, twitches running wild.
You have to come with me. You guys were there. We'll slow them down, Malcolm says. Talk them out of it.
There's a knock on the door. Jen Laurie points at the kitchen.
Go.
I grab my helmet, walking backward toward the kitchen, taking in all the Plutos. My pops once said goodbyes are the most possible impossible. 'Cause you never want to say them. But you'd be stupid not to when given the shot. I'm getting cheated out of mine because the wrong person showed up at my funeral. I shake my head and run out the back, catching my breath. I rush through the backyard we all hated because of relentless mosquitoes and fruit flies, then hop the fence. I sneak back around to the front of the house to see if there's a chance I can grab my bike before having to book it on my feet. The cop car is parked outside, but both officers must be inside, maybe even in the backyard by now if Peck snitched. I grab my bike and run with it down the sidewalk, hopping onto the seat once I get enough momentum. I don't know where I'm going, but I keep going. I live through my funeral, but I wish I was already dead.
Mateo, 2:52 a.m. The third time was not the charm. I can't even tell you if Elle is actually a Decker, but I blocked her without investigating because she spammed me with links to funny snuff videos gone wrong. I closed the app afterward. Have to admit it, I feel a little vindicated in how I've lived my life, because people can be the worst. It's hard to have a respectful conversation, let alone make a last friend. I keep receiving pop-up notifications for new messages, but I ignore them because I'm on the 10th level of a Dark Vanishing, this brutal Xbox Infinity game that has me wanting to look up cheat codes. My hero, Cove, a level 17 sorcerer with fire for hair, can't advance through this poverty-stricken kingdom without an offering to the princess. So I walk, well, Cove walks, past all the hawkers trying to sell off their bronze pins and rusty locks and go straight for the pirates. I must have gotten lost in my head on the way to the harbor, because Cove steps on a landmine and I don't have time to ghost phase through the explosion. Cove's arm flies through a hut's window, his head rockets into the sky, and his legs burst completely. My heart pounds all through the loading screen until Cove is suddenly back, good as new. Cove's got it good. I won't be able to respawn later. I'm wasting away in here, and there are two bookcases in my room. The blue bookcase on the bottom holds my favorite books that I could never get myself to purge when I did my monthly book donations to the teen health clinic down the block. The white bookcase on top is stacked with books I always planned on reading. I grab the books as if I'll have time to read them all. I want to know how this boy deals with a life that's moved on without him after he's resurrected by a ritual. or what it was like for the little girl who couldn't perform at the school talent show because her parents received the death cast alert while she was dreaming of pianos, or how this hero known as the People's Hope receives a message from these death cast-like prophets telling him he's going to die 6 days before the final battle where he was the key to victory against the king of all evil. I throw these books across the room and even kick some of my favorites off their shelves because the line between favorites and books that will never be favorites doesn't matter anymore. I rush over to my speakers and almost hurl them against the wall, stopping myself at the last second. Books don't require electricity, but speakers do, and it can all end here. The speakers and piano taunt me, reminding me of all the times I rushed home from school to have as much private time as I could with my music before Dad returned from his managerial shifts at the craft store. I would sing, but not too loudly so my neighbors couldn't overhear me. I tear down a map from the wall. I have never traveled outside of New York, and will never get on a plane to touch down in Egypt to see temples and pyramids, or travel to Dad's hometown in Puerto Rico to visit the rainforest he frequented as a kid. I rip up the map, letting all the countries and cities and towns fall at my feet. It's chaos in here. It's a lot like when the hero in some blockbuster fantasy film is standing in the rubble of his war-ravaged village, bombed because the villains couldn't find him. Except instead of demolished buildings and disintegrated bricks, there are books open face first on the floor, their damaged spines poking up, while others are piled on one another. I can't put everything back together or I'll find myself alphabetizing all the books and taping the map back together. I swear this isn't some excuse to not clean my room. I turn off the Xbox Infinity, where Cove has respawned, all limbs together as if he didn't just explode minutes ago. Cove is standing at the start point, idly dangling his staff. I have to make a move. I pick up my phone again, reopening the Last Friend app. I hope I step over the people who are dangerous like landmines.
Rufus, 2:59 a.m. Wish Deathcast called before I ruined my life tonight. If Deathcast hit me up last night, they would have knocked me out of that dream I was having, where I was losing a marathon to some little kids on tricycles. If Deathcast hit me up 1 week ago, I wouldn't have been up late reading all the notes Amy wrote me when we were still a thing. If Deathcast called 2 weeks ago, they would have interrupted that argument I was having with Malcolm and Tego about how Marvel heroes are better than DC heroes. And maybe I would have asked the Herald to weigh in. If Deathcast called 1 month ago, they would have killed the dead silence that came with me not wanting to talk with anyone after Amy left. But nah. Deathcast called tonight, while I was pounding on Peck, which led to Amy dragging him to the duplex to confront me, which led to Peck getting the cops involved and cutting my funeral short, which led to me being 100% alone right now. None of that would have happened if Deathcast called 1 day sooner. I hear police sirens and keep paddling. I hope something else is happening. I give it a few more minutes before I take a break, stopping between a McDonald's and a gas station. It's mad bright. Maybe kneeling over here is stupid, but staying in plain sight might be a good hiding spot. I don't know. I'm not James Bond. I don't have some guidebook on how to hide from the bad guys. Shit. I'm the bad guy. I can't keep moving, though. My heart is racing, my legs are on fire, and I gotta catch my breath. I sit on the curb outside the gas station. It smells like piss and cheap beer. There's graffiti of two silhouettes on the wall with the air pumps for bike tires. The silhouettes are both shaped like the dude on the men's bathroom sign. In orange spray paint it says, The Last Friend App. I keep getting dicked out of proper goodbyes. No final hug with my family,
No final hug with the Plutos. It's not even the goodbyes, man. It's not getting to thank everyone for all they did for me. The loyalty Malcolm showed me time and time again. The entertainment Tego delivered with his B-movie scripts, like Canary Clown and The Carnival of Doom and Snake Taxi. Though Substitute Doctor was just so bad, even for a bad movie. Francis's character impressions had me dying so hard, I beg him to shut up because my ribcage hurt. The afternoon Jen Laurie taught me to play solitaire so I could keep myself moving, but also have alone time. The really great chat I had with Francis, when we were the last two awake, about how instead of complimenting and attractive anyone on their looks, my pickup lines should be more personal because anyone can have pretty eyes, but only the right kind of person can hum the alphabet and make it your new favorite beat. The way Amy always kept it real. Even just now when she set me free by telling me she wasn't in love with me. I could have really gone for one last Pluto solar system group hug. I can't go back now. Maybe I shouldn't have run. The charges probably went up for running, but I didn't have time to think. I gotta make this up to the Plutos. They spoke nothing but truth during their eulogies. I've messed up a bit lately, but I'm good. Malcolm and Tego wouldn't have been my boys if I weren't, and Amy wouldn't have been my girl if I were scum. They can't be with me, but that doesn't mean I have to be alone. I really don't want to be alone. I pick myself up and walk over to the wall with the graffiti and some oil-stained poster for something called Make a Moment. I stare at the last friend's silhouettes on the wall. Ever since my family died, I would have bet anything I was going to die alone. Maybe I will. But just because I was left behind doesn't mean I shouldn't have a last friend. I know there's a good Rufus in me. The Rufus I used to be. And maybe a last friend can drag him out of me. Apps really aren't my thing. But neither is beating in people's faces. So I'm already out of my element today. I enter the App Store, and I download Last Friend. The download is mad fast. Probably a bitch on my data, but who cares? I register as a Decker, set up my profile, upload an old photo off my Instagram, and I'm good to go. Nothing like receiving 7 messages in my first 5 minutes to make me feel a little less lonely. Even though one guy's throwing some bullshit about having the cure to death in his pants. And yo, I'll take death instead.
Mateo, 3:14 a.m. I adjust the settings on my profile so I'll only be visible to anyone between the ages of 16 and 18. Older men and women can no longer hit on me. I take it one step further, and now only registered Deckers can connect with me, so I don't have to deal with anyone looking to buy a couch or pod. This diminishes the online numbers significantly. I'm sure there are hundreds, maybe thousands, of teens who received the alert today, but there are only 89 registered Deckers between the ages of 16 and 18 online right now. I receive a message from an 18-year-old girl named Zoe, but I ignore it when I see a profile for a 17-year-old named Rufus. I've always liked that name. I click on his profile. Name, Rufus Emeterio. Age, 17. Gender, male. Height, 5'10". Weight, 169 pounds. Ethnicity, Cuban-American. Orientation, bisexual. Job, professional time waster. Interests, cycling, photography. Favorite movies, TV shows, books. Skip. Who you were in life. I survived something I shouldn't have. Bucket list. Do it up. Final thoughts. It's about time. I've made mistakes, but I'm gonna go out right. I want more time, more lives, and this Rufus Emeterio has already accepted his fate. Maybe he's suicidal. Suicide can't be predicted specifically, but the death itself is still foreseen. If he is self-destructive, I shouldn't be around him. He might actually be the reason I'm about to clock out. But his photo clashes with that theory. He's smiling and he has welcoming eyes. I'll chat with him, and if I get a good vibe, he might be the kind of guy whose honesty will make me face myself. I'm going to reach out. There's nothing risky about hello. Mateo T., 3:17 a.m. Sorry you'll be lost, Rufus. I'm not used to reaching out to strangers like this. There have been a few times in the past I considered setting up a profile to keep Decker's company, but I didn't think I could provide much for them. Now that I'm a Decker myself, I understand the desperation to connect even more. Rufus E., 3:19 a.m. Hey, Mateo. Nice hat. He not only responded, but he likes my Luigi hat from my profile picture. He's already connecting to the person I want to become. Mateo T., 3:19 a.m. Thanks. Think I'm going to leave the hat here at home. I don't want the attention. Rufus E., 3:19 a.m. Good call. A Luigi hat isn't exactly a baseball cap, right? Mateo T., 3:19 a.m. Exactly. Rufus E., 3:20 a.m. Wait, you haven't left your house yet? Mateo T., 3:20 a.m. Nope. Rufus E., 3:20 a.m. Did you just get the alert a few minutes ago? Mateo T., 3:20 a.m. Deathcast called me a little after midnight. Rufus E., 3:20 a.m. What have you been doing all night? Mateo T., 3:20 a.m. Cleaning and playing video games. Rufus E., 3:20 a.m. Which game? Rufus E., 3:21 a.m. Never mind, the game doesn't matter. Don't you have stuff you want to do? What are you waiting for? Mateo T., 3:21 a.m. I was talking to potential last friends and they were not great, is the kindest way to put it. Rufus E., 3:21 a.m. Why do you need a last friend before starting your day? Mateo T., 3:22 a.m. Why do you need a last friend when you have friends? Rufus E., 3:22 a.m. I asked you first. Mateo T., 3:22 a.m. Fair. I think it's insane to leave the apartment knowing something or someone is going to kill me. Also because there are last friends out there claiming they have the cure to death in their pants. Rufus E., 3:23 a.m. I spoke to that dick too. Not his dick, exactly. But I reported and blocked him afterward. I promise I'm better than that guy. I guess that's not saying much. Do you want a video chat? I'll send you the invite. An icon of a silhouette speaking into a phone flashes. I almost reject the call, too confused about the suddenness of this moment, but I answer before the call goes away, before Rufus goes away. The screen goes black for a second, and then a total stranger with the face Rufus has in his profile appears. He's sweating and looking down, but his eyes quickly find me, and I feel exposed, maybe even a little threatened, like he's some scary childhood legend that can reach through the screen and drag me into a dark underworld. In my overactive imagination's defense, Rufus has already tried bullying me out of my own world and into the world beyond, so... Yo, Rufus says. You see me? Yeah, hey. I'm Mateo. Hey, Mateo. My bad for springing the video chat on you, Rufus says. Kind of hard to trust someone you can't see, you get me? No worries, I say. There's a glare, which is a little blinding wherever he is, but I can still make out his light brown face. I wonder why he's so sweaty. You wanted to know why I'd prefer a last friend over my real-life friends, right? Yeah, I say. Unless that's too personal. Nah, don't worry about that. I don't think too personal should exist between last friends. Long story short, I was with my parents and sister when our car crashed into the Hudson River and I had to watch them die. Living with that guilt isn't something I want for my friends. I have to throw that out there and make sure that you're okay with this. With you leaving your friends behind? No. The chance you might have to watch me die. I'm being faced with the heaviest of chances today. I may have to watch him die, unless it's the other way around, and both possibilities make me want to throw up. It's not that I feel a deep connection or anything to him already, but the idea of watching anyone die makes me sick and sad and angry, and that's why he's asking. But not doing anything is hardly comforting either. Okay, yeah. I can do it. Can you? There's the whole you not leaving your house problem. Last friend or not, I'm not spending the rest of my life holed up in someone's apartment. And I don't want you to either, but you gotta meet me halfway, Mateo, Rufus says. The way he says my name is a little more comforting than the way I imagined that creep Philly would say it. It's more like a conductor giving a pep talk before a sold-out performance. Believe me, I know it can get ugly out here. There was a point where I didn't think any of this was worthwhile. Well, what changed? I don't mean it to sound like a challenge, but it kind of is. I'm not leaving the safety of my apartment that easily. You lost your family, and then what? I wasn't about this life, Rufus says, looking away. And I would have been game with game over. But that's not what my parents and sis wanted for me. It's mad twisted, but surviving showed me it's better to be alive wishing I was dead than dying wishing I could live forever. If I can lose it all and change my attitude, you need to do the same before it's too late, dude. You gotta go for it. Go for it. That's what I said in my profile. He's paid more attention than the others and cared about me the way a friend should. Okay, I say. How do we do this? Is there a handshake or something? I'm really hoping my trust isn't betrayed the way it's been in the past. We can get a handshake going when we meet, but until then I promise to be the Mario to your Luigi. Except I won't hog the spotlight. Where should we meet? I'm by the drugstore south of... I have one condition, I say. His eyes squint. He's probably nervous about the curveball I'm throwing his way. You said I have to meet you halfway, but you need to pick me up from home. It's not a trap, I swear. Sounds like a trap, Rufus says. I'm gonna find a different last friend. It's really not, I swear. I almost dropped the phone. I screwed everything up. Seriously, I'm kidding, dude, he says. I'll send you my phone number and you can text me your address. Then we can come up with a plan. I'm just as relieved as I was when Andrea from Deathcast called me Timothy during a call, when I thought I'd actually lucked into more life. Except this time it's okay to fully relax, I think. Will do, I say. He doesn't say bye or anything. He just looks at me for a little longer, likely sizing me up, or maybe questioning whether or not I'm actually luring him into a trap. See you in a bit, Mateo. Try not to die before I get there. Try not to die getting here, I say. Be safe, Rufus. Rufus nods and ends the video chat. He sends me his phone number, and I'm tempted to call it to make sure he's the one who picks up, and not some creep who's paying him to collect addresses of young, vulnerable guys. But if I keep second-guessing Rufus, this last friend business won't work. I am a little concerned about spending my end day with someone who's accepted dying. Someone who's made mistakes. I don't know him, obviously, and he might turn out to be insanely destructive. He is outside in the middle of the night on a day when he's slated for death, after all. But no matter what choices we make, solo or together, our finish line remains the same. It doesn't matter how many times we look both ways. It doesn't matter if we don't go skydiving to play it safe, even though it means we'll never get to fly like my favorite superheroes do. It doesn't matter if we keep our heads low when passing a gang in a bad neighborhood. No matter how we choose to live, we both die at the end. Part 2. The Last Friend. A ship in harbor is safe, but that is not what ships are built for. John A. Shedd.
Andrea Donahue. 3:30 a.m. Deathcast did not call Andrea Donahue because she isn't dying today. Andrea herself, one of Deathcast's top reps since their inception 7 years ago, has made her fair share of end-day calls. Tonight, between midnight and 3, Andrea called 67 Deckers. Not her best number, but it's proven difficult to beat her record of 92 calls in one shift ever since she was put under inspection for rushing through calls. Allegedly. On her way out of the building, limping, with her cane, Andrea hopes HR won't review her call log tonight, even though she knows hope is a dangerous thing in this profession. Andrea mixed up several names, too eager to get from one Decker to the next. It'd be terrible timing to lose her job, with all the physical therapy she needs after her accident on top of her daughter's mounting tuition. Not to mention, it's the only job she's ever been great at because of one major life hack she discovered that has sent others out the door and on to less distressing jobs. Rule number 1 of 1. Deckers are no longer people. That's it. Abide by this one and only rule, and you won't find yourself wasting hours with the company's counselors. Andrea knows there's nothing she can do for these Deckers. She can't fluff their pillows, or serve them last meals, or keep them alive. She won't waste her breath praying for them. She won't get invested in their life stories and cry for them. She simply tells them they're dying and moves on. The sooner she gets off the phone, the sooner she reaches the next Decker. Andrea reminds herself every night how lucky these Deckers are to have her at their service. She doesn't just tell people they're dying. She gives them a chance to really live. But she can't live for them. That's on them. She's already done her part. And she does it well.
Rufus. 3:31 a.m. I'm biking toward that Mateo kid's house. He better not be a serial killer, or so help me. Nah. He's chill. It's obvious he spends way too much time in his head and is probably too antisocial for his own damn good. I mean, check this. I'm legit gonna pick him up from his house like he's some prince stuck in a high tower in need of rescuing. I think once the awkwardness is out of the way, he'll make for a solid partner in crime. If not, we can always part ways. It'll suck, 'cause that's a waste of time we don't have, but it is what it is. If nothing else, having a last friend should make my friends feel a little better about me running wild around the city. It makes me feel a little better, at least.
Malcolm Anthony. 3:34 a.m. Deathcast did not call Malcolm Anthony tonight because he isn't dying today, but his future has been threatened. Malcolm and his best friend, Tego, didn't offer the police any clues as to where they believe Rufus may be headed. Malcolm told the police Rufus is a decker and absolutely not